In the Millennium Centre, I don't know if you've ever been in there, in Cardiff, and I am glad I wasn't in Cardiff this weekend. Bob and Julie are there. Well, I think they're on the way home. We went Thursday into the into Cardiff Bay. Wednesday, and the boys went into the city, Cardiff City, on Thursday. And it was packed then, and nobody knew what was happening then, whether they were coming back or not. But, I mean, it's a lovely place, but get a few thousand people there, it's a bit much. But, nevertheless, that's where the Millennium Centre is. And a few years ago, I picked up a leaflet entitled The Power of Touch at the Centre. What a title, The Power of Touch. And so what I'm going to do tonight is speak on the five senses. Right, what are they? Can anybody tell me? There's touch, I've given you that one.
Taste.
Smell.
Sight.
Sight. Hearing. That's it. Touch, hear, taste, smell and see. That's the order I've got them in. So my reading for tonight is Luke chapter 8, 40 to 48. And we've heard this story sort of in sermons quite a bit lately, but you know, we're going to have it again anyway. Now, when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. Then a man named Jairus, a ruler of the synagogue, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house because his only daughter, his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me." Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." The woman in the scriptures there was desperate. She'd been ill for 12 years and she'd been in great distress. Spent all her money on doctors. She was probably ashamed of her condition. Didn't know what else to do. Well, she did the only thing left for her to do. She somehow got through the crowd and touched the hem of Jesus' garment. She reached out in faith, knowing that Jesus could heal her. And when he did, she was touched. She was touched by him in every area of her life. Physically, first and foremost. Spiritually, emotionally, her faith was rewarded. And in turn, she would be able to touch other people's lives. This woman, I'm sure, wouldn't be able to stay silent. She'd be telling the world, I think, that she was healed. She'd been trying to be healed and get better for 12 years, and just one touch did it for her. We can reach out and touch Jesus. We all need him, don't we? Young or old and in between. We all need Jesus. And as Jesus responded to that woman in the scriptures, he responds to us. He sees our needs. He knows who are in distress, who are troubled. Those are questions to ask. And he will touch our lives, our minds, our bodies, souls, and spirits, the power of touch. The power of touch, not in the Millennium Center, but the power of touch from God. A few years ago, I was in hospital and shared a side ward with an elderly lady who was seriously ill. And I know one night we just sat up talking all night about Jesus. She wasn't a Christian, but she was asking me questions right through the night. And 2 weeks later, her Christian son wrote to me saying that his mother had died and that she'd become a Christian a few days earlier. We sometimes think we can't do much, don't we? We're just ordinary people. But it's amazing how other people's lives can be touched by God through us. I know Paul's, I think he's told this story before, but we were visiting at the QMC, about 10 years ago. And we'd gone to see a baby in ICU, couldn't get in. The parents had forgotten to tell them that we were coming. And we sat having a cup of coffee, hoping. It wasn't Costa either. They didn't do it then. But we were hoping to see the parents as they passed. But we didn't. But we sat talking to this young man, or he sat talking to us. And he'd broken his hand. I think he'd been in a fight. His hand was so swollen he couldn't move his fingers. And he was trying to pluck up the courage to go to A&E. So he just sat there talking to us, got his bottle of whiskey out of his bag and had some of his whiskey to deaden the pain. And Paul says to him, "Do you want me to pray for you?" Just really quietly, you know, there's loads of people about. And this young man says, "Oh yes, my mother's a Catholic." So anyway, Paul prayed for this chap, and before our eyes, I mean, we were amazed. We shouldn't have been, but we were amazed. This man could open his hand, he could move his fingers, and he stood up in the middle of the WRVS cafe and he shouted, "He's healed me! He's healed me!" I don't know whether he meant Paul or the Lord, but we never asked him that. But he came from Nottingham, so we said, "Well, go to Talbot Street. They'll encourage you." But, you know, just sitting there quietly, just having a cup of coffee, and God made this opportunity for us. And it wasn't us. It wasn't Paul touching this man. It was the touch of God. But we can reach out and touch them through the Lord, and we can show people that we belong to the Lord and pray for them. The power of touch. Do you know, it's been said that the Beatles' music has touched more lives than any other music. But I think we've got to differ, haven't we? The song of love that Jesus gives us touches far more. We reach out and touch him. He touches us. And that is the power of touch. So that's my first point, touch. The next one is hear, as in listen here. Psalm 27, verse 7. "Hear my voice when I call, O Lord. Be merciful to me and answer me." Hear my voice. Do you know, one thing I've learned being a mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, doesn't go any further than that, all children are deaf when you ask them to do something. I mean, the times I have been at Penny and Andrew's and they've said, "Joash, please empty the dishwasher." 10 minutes later, "Joash, please empty the dishwasher." 10 minutes later, "Joash, your dinner's ready," and he's down like a shot. Dishwasher not emptied, but he's there for his dinner. And, you know, children's hearing miraculously returns when you ask them if you want some chocolate. They hear that, don't they? Yeah, I've been there enough. When we moved house a few years ago, well, Andrew was only two, so it's 40 years ago when we moved to our second house, I couldn't find Andrew. He was a very, very quiet little boy, didn't talk a lot. Yes, he has. In fact, we never thought he'd talk very much, but yes, he does, Trevor, yeah. And Andrew had disappeared. It was the first time he'd been able to play out in the garden, because we lived in a terrace house before, and couldn't find him anywhere. Began to panic. Shall I ring the police? What shall I do? He was behind the shed, pretending not to hear me. Oh, dear me. I wasn't pleased with him, because I'd been looking for him for ages. He just did not answer, because he didn't talk very well. But he could have come out from behind this shed, but he didn't. I wonder how many of us are spiritually dead, deaf, don't hear what God is saying to us, or think that what God says doesn't apply to us. When our children were at school, they would all come home at the same time and tell me about their day. Now, with four children all trying to tell me what they'd done at school, it was a bit, you know, I couldn't sort of say, hang on, one at a time, but had to unravel all that they were saying. But at the same time, I knew their individual voices. If they were playing out with their friends, I could tell which were my children, because I knew their voices. God hears us amongst all the chaos, all our confusion, all our disputes. He hears. And do you know why? He loves us. He wants to answer our prayers, grant our requests, wants to give us the very best. He knows us as individuals. He is our voice. He knows his sheep. God never switches off, never gets bored, never in a rush. And we in turn must listen to his voice, not always in the thunder and the lightning, but often in the still, small voice. And I'm sure we know the story of when Samuel was taken into the care of Eli, the priest, to serve him. God spoke to Samuel in the night. Can you imagine being spoken to in the middle of the night? Oh dear, not knowing where the voice came from would frighten us to death. And I should imagine Samuel would be frightened. So he went to Eli thinking it was him. But no. And three times that happened. And then Eli realized what was happening. It was God speaking. And Samuel was prepared this time and responded. A close friend of ours owns a farm, and we went up there, took the children up there a few weeks ago. She'd got lots of sheep that were lambing. They were all in pens. Some of them had just had two lambs, some triplets. But as soon as Ruth went into the barn where the sheep were, they listened. They were all quiet. It was a bit eerie, really. But they're all quiet, waiting for Ruth to speak to each one of them. And she did as she went along the pens. And they all sort of looked. Thought, well, that really is amazing. You hear that, don't you? But it was really true. I used to say to our children that God has given us two ears and one mouth for a reason. Listen twice as much as we speak. God has a lot to tell us. He loves us, and he wants to tell us that. He sacrificed his son that we might be forgiven. Yes. Taste. That's the next one. Psalm 34, verse 8. Taste and see that the Lord is good. I was looking in the concordance for references about taste, and I've read something that I've not noticed before. In Job 6, verse 6, says, is there any taste in the white of an egg. And there isn't really, is there? No. One of my grandsons only eats white, but he lathers it in salt. And the other one only eats a yolk. So it's quite convenient when I take them out for breakfast anywhere. And I didn't know he was being scriptural when he said he didn't like the whites of an egg. Taste and see that the Lord is good. We often say that the proof of the pudding is in the eating. If we don't try something, we'll never know, will we? I'm not very adventurous, really, in tasting different foods. I don't like spicy. I don't like fried stuff very much. But my kids say, well, have you tasted it? No, I haven't, but I don't fancy it. So I probably miss out so much. And often we miss out in the Christian life, don't we? Or even refuse the Christian life because we've never tasted it. We've never said to God, look, take me further. Or, you know, I want to become a Christian. Jesus wants us to see, to taste and see that he is good. And I can assure you, he will never give us anything that is bad for us because he loves us too much for that. He invites us to come to him, to taste what he has to offer. Peace, contentment, joy. All this God offers us. You know, are we willing to try? Are we willing to taste? Our life must be controlled by love, just as Christ loved us and gave his life for us as a sweet-smelling offering. So now we've got on to the next sense, smell. When I was a young mum, I used to bake quite a lot. I baked bread, cakes, puddings, cooked dinners every day. I don't do any of that now. I used to pride myself on the fact that I was doing the best for my family. But I think they longed for a sliced loaf sometimes or a bought cake. But the smell was delicious, and when we were selling up, I made the cake and put the coffee pot on, as you do. When we give our lives to God, it is so pleasing to him that it is like a sweet-smelling savour. We need to spread the gospel of Christ. People need to hear about Jesus. He's beautiful and wants us to spread that beauty. Now, I can't stand the smell of lilies, and I avoid lilies at all costs. So when I die, please don't put any lilies anywhere near me, else I shall come back and haunt you. No, I won't really. But I do not like the smell of lilies. We don't want people avoiding us, do we? Because we don't show the attributes of Christ. We need to draw close to him in order to be able to catch that sweetness and delight. Have I gone through? I must have gone through. Have I gone through three or four? Four. Yeah, right. I'm glad you're counting. Because I'm on my last point now then. Told you it's a long time since I preached, didn't it? The last point is in John 4. The woman at the well. We know the story, don't we? The woman at the well, Jesus shouldn't have been talking to her because of all the rules and regulations of the land. And this woman was an outcast. She had to fetch water from the well at midday when nobody was about. She'd not led a good life, lots of husbands. Now she was living with a man she'd certainly never speak to anyone of any reputation, and never a Jew, because that was the religious custom. Jews and Samaritans couldn't speak. Jesus was thirsty and wanted a drink. She got him a drink, and he explained to her. He he talked to her about her life and all that she'd done. She was amazed that he knew. But she realised that what Jesus was offering her was life, life that only Jesus can give. And she went back into the town where she'd come from, shouting, come and see what Jesus has done. Come and see. She wanted people to see with their eyes this man who told her everything. In Tesco's, there used to be a big poster, I don't know whether it's still there. Seeing is believing. That's what happened to this woman. She saw, she met Jesus and believed. And we can't see Jesus in the physical form, but we can see him with our spiritual eyes and believe. Sounds so easy, don't it? Just believe in Jesus, but that's all it takes. Believe in Jesus. Know that he lives today, to know that he loves us. He died for us. This woman would have had so many questions, but God answered them all by giving her a clean and a new life. She wanted everyone to know, come and see for yourselves what this man has done for me. Come and see my Saviour. I'm sure that she would bring many people to see for themselves. The other day I stood at some pedestrian lights waiting to cross the road, and there was a young mum there with her small toddler and an older lady. The older lady crossed the road while the pedestrian lights were still on red, and the little boy snatched his hand out of his mum's and started to follow. He thought that was a sign to cross the road. Car was coming, everybody was saved, but it was a near miss. The little boy followed the example of this older lady. And you know, as Christians, people follow our example. They're watching us all the time. They're watching for us to see how we live. They're watching for us to trip up often. And we do trip up, we make mistakes, don't we? We're human. And God forgives us of our sins. He loves us enough to forgive us. And that shouldn't stop us from being an example for him. What are we showing the world? What do they see in us? Jesus or our own selfish personality? You know, I think to be blind would be the worst of these fine senses to lose. But to be spiritually blind is far worse. Not being able to see God's love. Touch, hear, taste, smell, see. You know, we can be so busy sometimes or just not paying attention that we miss out on the good things God has for us. And that he's given to us. He's given us these senses for our own good. Because he loves us. And so that we can love him back. Let's use them. Now Iris Johnson, who along with Ken pastored the Sawley Outreach for a while, used to say that God has given us a sixth sense. The sixth one being common sense. And really, to me, isn't it common sense to acknowledge and thank God for his gift of love through his Son, the Lord Jesus Christ?